It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And I'd like to welcome into the studio Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Great. And on the phone, I understand, looking longingly through the window at the warmth of the day, Zaz Hollander.
That is exactly right. Hi, Mike.
Ah, great. We have a number of things that have happened this week, and I think that it's good to start with Tuesday's Borough Assembly meeting and the topic that seemed to draw a lot of people, the room was pretty full, was taxes. Zaz, how about a summary there?
Sure. Yes, it was a full room. It was sort of standing room only for a little while. There were some empty seats, but people were kind of ringed around the back of assembly chambers. And ultimately, the assembly tabled indefinitely a 2% sales tax, which was the kind of the amended version. Would have been, I believe, a $500 cap, 2% tax. I don't even know if they got to the sunset that Mayor Halter had proposed. But it's not, at this point, at least for October, the sales tax is dead. It's possible it could. There's still time to put it on a January special election ballot. But the assembly heard quite a bit of testimony opposed to that in that anti-tax folks were contending that that would help the school district, that it's winter and people don't want to vote. So the school district kind of rally their forces, pack the polls. Terry and I kind of talked about how it seemed like initially there was about a 50-50 split in terms of the pro and cons in the audience, although a number of the pros worked for the school district and did not testify. Testimony was majority against the tax. And, for some of the usual reasons, the state's in a recession, PFD got capped, and the people who are least able to pay will be paying this. Others were castigating the school district for poorly educating our children. I think some of that was based on misinformation about Alaska's ranking among states and just the challenges of Bush education versus urban education, the costs, et cetera. At any rate, I think that it wasn't a huge surprise that there was a lot of opposition to a sales tax. There were a number of city officials and residents who said, this can't necessarily, you can't prove to us this is going to go to education because the borough can't earmark money that way. You also can't prove to us that our property taxes are going to go down, even though there was an element of the legislation that had the amount of local funding to the district capped at $50 million. Which some assembly members contend is a guarantee that property taxes would have to go down, or at least not go up. And so, and there also wasn't a lot of information about how much money would be raised and who would be paying the sales tax. The district didn't have calculations. I don't know how easy it would be to get them on how many tourists would be paying the sales tax. At the end of the meeting, which was a long meeting with a lot of testimony, it was asked, a little bit after 10, I believe, when the decision was made 6-1 with Jim Sykes voting against to table indefinitely, and that the borough manager will form a committee of school district folks, business leaders, cities to talk about what now. And the school district at this point is of the mind that we're starting over again, that sales tax clearly was not popular. And so we need to figure out another way to fund our schools.
Terry, do you have something to add?
Well, no, Zaz did a really good job and described what was sort of a painful meeting for those of us listening to 35 people testifying, the majority of which were a lot of them saying the same thing. And I think you have a kind of, as you were saying that, Zaz, kind of came to mind how handy those flip charts would be that the Senate uses in the U.S. Senate when they're trying to get their point across, because there definitely is a lot of people that don't have current information as far as how much of the borough is funding the school district. I mean, the district did get up at the very beginning and put out some quotes, but I think it went right over their heads. And it just comes down to that same sort of Achilles heel, or two of them maybe. One, nobody really wants to pay any taxes, and that they will not admit that they don't pay very much taxes, and that mistrust of government, just no matter what you do, there's just a mistrust of government. And oddly enough, I think people just didn't seem to get the memo that this was just an idea to put in front of the voters, to let the voters decide. Normally, people are all about transparency and letting voters have more say. And that's really all this assembly meeting was about, was it was the last meeting available to the assembly to be able to put place things on the October ballot, one of which is going to be a pretty skinny ballot in some areas because there's nothing really on it other than unless you have an assembly member and there's only two up for re-election, or a school board member and there's only two. So it was sort of a chance to have the voters weigh in to find out how best to diversify the funding that goes into school district. And it does get a little bit obnoxious to hear people coming up and saying things that, you know, they've only been told in all fairness by someone else, but there's no fact checker at the very end that can get up and say this was presented and it's, you know, it's completely wrong. This could be seen another way. So people leave there thinking that. There were a fair amount of people there that came from Anchorage. There was an assembly person from Anchorage there. There was several people representing American Prosperity there from Anchorage. And normally that gets a suggestion of why, you know, why are people coming from other areas when it doesn't affect them. So, you know, there were some, you know, this whole thing is pretty much based on what Wasilla is already doing. So that was there, didn't get brought up enough. But I think the city's had some valid concerns. I guess I want to also just clarify that Jim Sykes wasn't really voting for what was on the table. In fact, he started by saying, I don't like what's on the table. But what he didn't want to see was the discussion go away and that they have to underfund or struggle to fund the school district. And he wanted the discussion to go. And that was basically why he voted for it when Steve Culligan called the question and or called for it to be voted down in the way it was. So it's dead. And although they are going to present a committee to take it up and talk about it and perhaps bring it back in some other form, that was his effort to do it. And I think that got a little misscrewed in some of the blogging that I saw.
So help me, you both listened, watched, followed this. I thought when Robert Hall from the Houston area stepped up, he, in a very clear way, in 3 minutes or less, was able to say he was in favor, he would vote for a tax, but he also very clearly identified what was being proposed as destined for failure. Now, what I heard as a theme that went through a number of presentations, the City of Palmer's city manager, for example, saying we only have an opportunity to comment on what we have before us. That's what we have. And what we're telling you is this is not ready for prime time. I heard other people say the same thing. So my question more is to the process. Did there seem to be some sense of urgency? This was being pushed to attempt to put it on the ballot in October. And as a result, there wasn't a very well-crafted, with all of the details, including I've talked to financial people who said, where was the data that showed the support for any particular form of tax, whether it was the percentage or what was going to be applied, at the rest of it, and the implications for the dollar amounts and the impact on different areas. I felt that this was a very thin proposal, and that was my observation. It seemed to follow as well. Zaz, any thought about that?
I am not a tax expert, but I'd agree on a policy level, and the fact that at the public hearing, during which the assembly was expected to make a decision, suddenly there are new numbers on the table. I mean, it wasn't illegal. The amendments to change the proposed tax from a 3% to a 2% were filed in a timely manner. But, you know, there were some people who had testimony written, and maybe to their advantage, I don't know. talking about the effect of a 3% tax, because that had been the number, and then it switched to 2% with a 500. It did seem as if it was rushed.
Okay. The other question is, from a strategic standpoint, given that voters in one part of the Talkeetna area, as well as voters in the city of Wasilla, already are going to be dealing with a tax issue, whether that was enough to say, maybe we don't want to be doing another tax on this same ballot. Terry, any thoughts about
that? Well, I think that definitely has an impact to the support from those cities. There's no doubt about it. You're piling on what they're trying to do to keep the money inside their city to do whatever they want to do with it. But, you know, I think it's even bigger than that. I think that we've gotten into sort of a rut out here of being able to flare up every time we want to raise property tax or we want to raise mill rates. And, you know, it's the day of reckoning is going to come when there were 100,000 people and there you have to come up with a way to service them. And, yes, the school district has gotten increases, but it hasn't been kept up within the amount of students that they've been getting. So they're still, they're always kind of trying to dig out. Was this the best vehicle for it? Probably not at this point, because the education to the voter wasn't done and nobody, as you said, really had a good grasp of what they were supposed to be looking for, what the data was behind it. It also could be argued it'll never be a good time until maybe Anchorage does it, and then we can sort of have a level playing field, and at least the threat of people going to Anchorage to do all their shopping can come off the table. But I think there will always be an avoidance. There always was a sector in that room that no matter what, they just don't think the state or that the borough should have any money, whether it's in black and white right in front of their face. They're just not going to buy into it. Now, will they feel the pain a little bit this fall when they send their kiddo to school and there's 40 kids in a high school class and 30, as someone quoted, with scissors running around in kindergarten? Probably, but only 21 or 22% of our population has kids in school. So it's a hard thing to do. But this probably could have done better. It just kind of brought the coalition of people out that are against this sort of thing. And not a lot of ammunition to go back with it. So taking a pause and getting some community support, getting some education for it, whether it happens this year or next year, or they find another vehicle for it, is yet to be seen. But the public at some point has to stop and think, you know, I'm saying no to licensing fees. I'm saying no to airport fees. I'm saying, you know, even the plastic bag fee that they're talking about now, no to that. It's just no to everything. And at some point, you know, where do we go when we're just saying no to everything?
Okay, so let us go on to a couple of other topics that were mentioned at that same meeting. Zaz, the one that I think you covered had to do with the interesting way of putting four separate buildings on a one-acre lot.
Ah, yes, the detached fourplexes. There was Assembly Member Doty, I want to say, has asked borough staff to expedite their review of this strategy, which, yeah, involves taking a one-acre lot, slightly under 1 acre, and putting four separate small-ish homes on that 4 acre with a shared well and either with separate septics or a shared septic, I guess, depending on the perk and the ground. This strategy is getting a lot of attention because of the sheer density involved, and there are preliminary concerns that having that many individual septics in one area, one next to the other, could pose a threat to groundwater contamination. There's really one builder, Dennis Byler, Byler Contracting, who's working with May Sprague, who is has been pioneering this technique. They contend that this is completely safe, won't foul the environment, won't lead to any kind of contamination. But people who live near these places are concerned about just the suddenness in which they appear. The Fishkill Community Council has asked for a moratorium until the borough can figure out some kind of strategy. And so what staff has been directed to do is just take a look at the issues that could surround the fourplex, detached fourplex construction, and see if there is, you know, a land use ramification involved enough that the permitting process needs to change. At this point, and to be clear, Byler started this before multifamily housing code was kind of rolled back in 2013, but Certainly since then, there is no permitting process at the borough level for a detached fourplex. There is a DEC process. So the borough is looking to see if maybe they need to reinstate some limits.
Okay. All right.
So well, what's the next step? Is the what is it exactly? I know they wrote had a resolution from the city council, but what did it was unclear to me what it meant by expediting. Next meeting, they should have some feedback, or
you know, I don't remember what date. Yeah. Initially, the Eileen Probasco said it would take 6 to 8 months, and I think Assembly Member Doty is concerned that that will allow for a lot of construction, even with winter coming. I mean, Byler is very fast, and he's known for fast, you know, quality homes. And so what Assembly Member Doty asked for was a report, I want to say in September, as to what the borough has found in terms of the land use ramifications and potential permit changes.
Yeah,
so
and also
much faster.
Probably they need to be looking at what the impact is on values to other homes around there, too.
Yeah.
And there probably, I would think there are some type of examples in the lower 48. It's not, it may be new to us, but chances are it's been done outside.
Yeah.
Okay. There was mention of the idea of somehow limiting plastic bags. And it appeared that there were briefly thrown up two ideas. One was to have a tax on plastic bags, and the second was to prohibit them. And there was mentioned during the meeting of a different approach that could would be allowed by either the borough or the cities. I thought I heard that the cities could prohibit plastic bags, but the borough could not do that. They could only provide a tax on plastic bags. And I know that many other communities around the country have tried variations on this theme. I know the city of Palmer has begun the process of looking at what others have done. And there seems to be a suggestion that to simplify the process, prohibiting plastic bags might be the clearest way to go. Zaz, any thoughts about that?
I think there's an argument for just an outright ban instead of a tax, which would involve, you know, the borough would have to pay somebody to collect the tax. The stores would need to be, the retailers would need to be involved as well, whereas an outright ban is in place in a few communities in Alaska. There's one in Bethel. There's one in Cordova.
Glen Allen, I think.
I didn't find any, and maybe there is, but there I didn't find any record of Glen Allen. And the issue with the bans is that there are ways retailers can get around them with kind of instead of the single disposable bag, a double layer that people may just use once and throw away anyhow. But there's also an issue with enforcement, and in Bethel, it's kind of unclear how enforced the bag ban is.
Okay.
Yeah, I know in other cities that have done it outside of Alaska, when it's an out-and-out ban, I think they have paper bags there or alternative bags, and they pay for them. The retailer keeps all the money. None comes back. I think the idea behind, unfortunate, again, they're saying tax. I should have said user fee of using a placing that amount on it was to have some type of a fund that would, if people did want to, you know, use plastic bags, then there would be some money to mitigate the cost to communities to doing that. So
yeah.
It'll be, I don't think they made any decision on that at this particular.
No. They were passing it.
No, there's a hearing in weeks.
Okay. Well, as the meeting wound down, Mr. Culligan has been on the assembly now, finishing up his second term, and will be timing out and leaving, commented about his history there. And it was a nice lead into the discussion that you, Terry, mentioned briefly, that there are assembly seats up. There are two of them, in this case, Assembly District 4, and there are three candidates there. And this is focused primarily in the Wasilla area. And Ted Leonard, who's Colleen Sullivan Leonard's husband, she's serving in the House of Representatives at the present time. Pat Hogan and Colleen Vague. And, of course, this being a non-incumbent seat leads to an interesting question of who's going to take it and what effect that will have. The second one is the seat in the Big Lake area, Dan Mayfield is the incumbent, and he's being challenged by Clayton Chu. Comment about that one, Terry, because you're somewhat familiar with the Big Lake area.
Well, they're both pretty well-known people. Dan has been in the seat for 3 years. I think he is well-recognized by the community. His person that has thrown the hat in is goes by the name of Moki, I think, most of the time, Moki Twos. He owns a road company and the pink buses you see, and somewhat controversial with some work that he's done from the borough off and on. His name's been kicked around a bit on certain things. So, yeah, I think that one, again, I think what is going to be the problem is voter turnout, that voters, this is making me wish we had write-in ballots, because I think it's hard to get people out on these October elections. And when that's all that's on them, it's even harder. So it's really going to be a game of who gets whose supporters out. It's a very big district. It's got the highest percentage of roads in the district, unimproved roads. You know, it has all the little quirks and challenges that go with being outside the urban area, and no shortage of strong opinions. So I think it'll probably come down to the people that thinks that Dan has done a good job. He's been a big advocate for the schools, it seems like, and EMS and fire service, which are all important services, and the other side that perhaps don't think the same thing. So maybe you have a better spin on it than I do, Zaz.
I think that you did a good job summing things up, Terry. I did notice that Dan Mayfield already has some signs up, so I don't think he is going to be complacent in this one. Moki is very well connected in the Big Lake community, has a lot of friends, and has connected and networked with a lot of people over the years in his role in the community as a contractor, et cetera. It's sort of in some ways, not to oversimplify, but it's a little bit of a kind of a good old boy network versus the politician.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and going to the school board, Ole Larson's seat in District 3 seems to be a safe one for him. He has no opponent. On the other hand, in District 6, Kelsey Trimmer, who's been occupying a seat there, is being opposed by Emery Schramm. And that pretty much completes the kind of borough-wide activities. On the other hand, in the cities, not only, as we've mentioned, is there a tax question on the ballot in Wasilla, but the mayor, Bert Cottle, very active mayor, has some opponents. He's not unopposed, and we'll see how that plays out. And then here in Palmer, there are two incumbents who are both running for the city council. The mayor here still has time in her tenure, but the there are four candidates, and the way the city of Palmer works is it's whoever the top two, if there are two seats open, the top two vote-getters get this. So Linda Combs and Brad Hansen, occupying seats now on the council, are being opposed by, in one case, Linda's daughter-in-law, and her niece. And another young woman running, Kenny Pasenik Linden. And Kenny ran 2 years ago, I believe, and came very close to winning a seat. So this is all going to be a very interesting local election in Palmer with that. Now, I'd like to turn a little bit toward the national scene. And I found a picture that I viewed recently very, very interesting and maybe revealing. It included our own senior senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski. And it included a guy who looked like he was a friendly, happy guy by the name of Zinke, who happens to be Interior Department head. This was interesting because the article in Alaska Dispatch News pointed out that Senator Murkowski, providing two bottles of Alaskan beer, was able to sit down and have a discussion with the Interior Secretary that seemed to be moving way beyond the points that reported when the Interior Secretary purportedly called and warned the senator about what could happen, perhaps, if she voted in a certain way. Azaz, any thoughts about that?
I don't know. Maybe this sort of thing happens and we just don't hear about it, but it really smacked of kind of desperation and bullying.
Right. Yeah. Terry?
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. I think those things go on, that arm twisting goes on behind closed doors, but this one really was out in the open. Maybe this is just lack of finesse on the side of the Trump administration, but I think that the message came across long and hard that people don't like that nonsense and shenanigans that go on that.
Well,
it didn't work. So.
Right. But I was struck by, okay, that was then. They still have to work with one another. And the Senators Committee has something to do with the budget for the Interior Department as well. So this isn't just someone in one position above another, but I thought what it reflected was the reality when you have to work with people. That maybe you don't just stand throwing barbs at one another.
Well, I think it's about the fact that, you know, the Senate has sort of woke up from their little coma here and decided that there are a couple of different divisions of government and that they should be leading the charge in a lot of things when they're getting, instead of being pulled behind. And I think that's sort of a message to the administration that, you know, they're in the room too, so.
Okay. Well, it was interesting and even nice to see that the senator from Alaska, who, by the way, as I perused letters to the editor and comments about what she had done, pro and con, my sense was, at least the sources I was looking at, was generally in favor of her actions. Zaz, did you have any sense about that? How her particular votes are being received here in Alaska?
I don't know. I guess the usual suspects are coming out against her. She's always had a challenge of mine as a moderate. You know, the conservatives can't stand it. So nothing new in terms of the party line.
Okay. Terry?
No, I think same observation. I think she, although, you know, maybe there's been a little bit of a change in people that were not really the adamant anybody but her, but just unsatisfied with some of her decisions, who have now have a different respect for the hard-fought battle that she had over this and how she stood on her principles and actually, you know, stood up for Alaskans as opposed to party. So I think she may have converted a few people, more than a few.
Yeah, we'll see what places we can actually see the results of those actions being played out, whether it's voting or more than just letters to the editor, et cetera. Okay, well, I think we've just about come to another point where we can say it's time to finish up this edition of Valley Edition. But I want to make sure that we haven't missed anything that either of you would like to touch upon. Terry, anything else that warrants a word or two?
Get out your sunscreen. It looks like you might need it this weekend.
Right. I understand that in Talkeetna, the projection is for a temperature somewhere in the 80s.
Which is really good news for the people that are putting on Salmon Fest.
Right.
They've had it in the rain a few years.
Got it. And Zaz, last comment?
Enjoy the rain that's coming back next week.
To cool us off. Well, thank you. Mike Malevsky here with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.